Welcome back to the FKT podcast. I'm your host, Heather Anderson. Today we're chatting with Ivy Smith, who set an unsupported FKT on the Benton MacKay Trail in 6 days, 18 hours. Join us to learn what all those glittering spots on the forest floor at night are, how to deal with the mental side of being unsupported, and how she managed to pull off a tough FKT despite a lingering injury. Thank you so much, Ivy, for coming on the show today to talk about your Benton MacKay Trail adventure.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, the Benton MacKay Trail is almost 300 miles long, and it's also your longest FKT by far, at least on the site. So I'd love to know if you could talk a little bit about the character of the BMT and also what drew you to attempt this massively long FKT in the most difficult style, unsupported.
Totally. So I had been wanting to get back out to the Appalachian Mountains ever since I thru-hiked the AT in 2017. I had gone back and done, you know, like a portion of the AT again in 2018. I had thru-hiked the Long Trail, but then I moved west to Colorado and I just hadn't really been back. I didn't have time to go back and re-hike the whole AT this fall. So I was looking for other trails that might be a little more manageable in the amount of time that I had to hike. And the Benton MacKay Trail came up. I started reading about its history. It really intrigued me. The fact that Benton MacKay was kind of the man with the vision for the AT appealed to me. And then I started reading about his wife, Betty, and just, you know, her history with walking and how she was like a female suffragist. Long walks were one of the ways that she did her protests. And then unfortunately she committed suicide in the East River in New York. She allegedly had depression and anxiety and stuff like that. And I just kind of wondered if maybe if there had been a long trail for her to walk, there could have been a different outcome. But that trail kind of just appealed to me for those reasons. The distance definitely kind of intimidated me as far as trying to do it unsupported. I had never done anything that long, completely unsupported, where I carried all of my food, everything I needed for that entire distance, without stopping to resupply. But I kind of liked that challenge, that appealed to me. So I allotted myself 7 days to cover the distance. And that's how much food I brought. I only carried about 3,500 calories per day for that 7 day distance, which I knew was less than probably what I needed. But it was also the most manageable weight that I could carry.
And why did you want to go unsupported?
I think the style of unsupported has always seemed really inspiring to me, just because I really feel like I am an independent person. I like to be able to do things entirely on my own, even though nothing we do, like, I don't live in a vacuum. People helped, you know, in ways outside of this hike. But it kind of was an empowering thing for me to see if I could do that without needing any help. And I did have some like gear malfunctions, which if I had been going self-supported, I might have been able to repair some things or like pick up new pieces of gear. So that kind of added a little bit of challenge. But I also liked the simplicity of going unsupported. Sometimes when I get into towns resupplying on through hikes, I get a little overwhelmed. And I end up wasting a lot of time. So going unsupported, it was nice because it kind of streamlined the effort. It made time management easier for me because all I was going to be doing was like staying out on the trail and walking, sleeping and eating. So
you mentioned that you live in Colorado and Benton MacKay Trail is in North Carolina and Georgia. Those two are not very close to each other. So your start to me sounds really exhausting. You drove for like 3 days across the country and then you also spent 8 hours in the car, like getting to the northern terminus, and then you immediately started hiking. Like, why didn't you camp and then just start fresh in the morning? Like,
it was chaotic. Yeah, I think I was pretty excited to just start walking, and also like really nervous just to have like 288 miles looming ahead of me. But yeah, so I drove for 3 days. I drove about like 8 to 10 hours a day for 3 days. On my third day, I got in a shuttle, and then that shuttle took me. It took about 4 hours almost to get to Baxter Creek Trailhead. So when I got there, I think it was probably about 7:30 p.m. It was definitely dark because this was in October. So I had kind of like half as much time of daylight as I did in darkness. And I just decided to start walking. I struggle with insomnia, and a lot of the times when I am kind of anxious about something or like looking forward to something big, sleep just doesn't happen for me. So I figured if I did, I had booked a campsite there for that night, thinking, you know, at least if I need it, I can sleep. But I knew on some level that there's no way I would sleep. I would just lay in my tent for like 5 hours and get stressed out. So it didn't, yeah, it just didn't seem like the thing to do.
Fair enough. Fair enough. When I was reading your trip report, you talked about starting out and, you know, the Benton McKay Trail starts with a big climb up Mount Sterling. And it sounded like you were plagued with an injury, like right from the start of this whole experience. And I just wonder if you could talk a little bit about that and like the impact that it had on your FKT, because starting like a big, super challenging, unsupported FKT injured just doesn't sound like a good idea.
No. Yeah, I have never struggled with low back pain. And then this summer, like towards the end of the summer in September, I strained my low back, and I think it was just a, like a accumulation of things that caused the injury. It wasn't like one traumatic incident. I had been working a desk job, had terrible posture. I ran, a big trail race, a 2-day trail race in, Big Sky, Montana. And I ran the fastest I'd ever run downhill, which still didn't really make that much of a difference in my overall time, but I was proud of myself. But I think that, and then sitting in the car for so long, it just kind of all created this like pretty serious low back injury, to the point where I would be waking up in the mornings in the weeks leading up to my FKT, like not able to breathe because it hurt so bad. Started doing some like exercises and stretches, and I'm like, I can manage this. I can get better. It'll be great. I drove with a lumbar support pillow the whole way out to Georgia. And that actually did really help. I think just kind of improving my posture definitely helped with pain management. And when I started hiking, I felt fine for that first like 13 and a half miles before I like decided I finally needed to take a nap. And then I had kind of pitched my tent on some uneven ground. I spent most of those like 4 hours that I was horizontal, just like shifting and trying to stay on my sleeping pad. And when I got up, my back pain was like back to like a level 9 or 10 in, on the pain scale, which was really disheartening because I had driven so far to get out there. I had been planning this all summer. Really, I started planning in the spring. And I was almost certain that I would have to quit, which was a major bummer to realize. And so at that point I actually reached out to my partner just through my InReach and was just like, yeah, my back is, it's really hurting. And like, I just needed to tell someone, you know, like I wasn't asking for advice. I was just like, somebody just needs to know that I'm struggling. So I sent that message, kept walking, got to Enos Creek, which is really beautiful. It's a really beautiful part of the trail, and just sat down, next to the creek. Pulled out my InReach, saw I had gotten a message back. And Logan, my partner, had just said, just remember the body is really adaptable and resilient. And I think like in any other situation that would have annoyed me, but like in this moment I was like, yeah, my body's adaptable and resilient. Like maybe I'll just keep walking for today. Like I'll just take it one day at a time. I'll just walk today. There's nowhere else I want to be. So we'll just see how far I get today.
Right. And did the pain subside or did you just have to manage it for the next 6 days?
It took like careful management for sure. Cause, twisting was what kind of aggravated it. So, you know, putting my pack on and off, I just had to be really careful that I kept my like spine aligned. But I did find that walking actually helped. And when I laid down to sleep at night, quote unquote night, I just needed to be really careful about choosing a flat spot, to lay down. I realized that was kind of like paramount to making it easier for me to get up and walk again afterwards. And so I would say over the course of the next 6 days, the pain was like greatly reduced. And then by the time I got to the terminus, and like stopped my watch and my body knew it was all over, everything just like flared up again. So it might've been mental mostly, just yeah, mentally kind of rationalizing, continuing to walk, even though it hurt.
Right. Right. Well, your brain produces all kinds of like endorphins and things like that, that can mask pain while you're moving. So, hopefully it has resolved since you got done or is resolving.
Yes. Physical therapy has been game changing.
Good. Good. So, I'm glad.
Yeah.
You mentioned you started planning this in the spring. Why did you choose the autumn to attempt this FKT?
Yeah, it's crazy. I feel like the last two hikes I've done, the BMT and then the Arizona Trail, I picked fall for both of them. And not necessarily because that was the time of year I wanted to hike the trails. It was just the time that worked. And it was, I mean, the darkness I think is like really challenging. So I wasn't looking forward to having like 12 hours in the dark and maybe even more than 12 hours in the dark and then a little less than that in the light. But I have been working a desk job for like a year and a half. So it's kind of a convoluted story, but and I wasn't super happy working that job. It wasn't the right environment for me. I loved my coworkers, but just sitting at a desk was really hard. And so I had kind of been planning an exit this winter. I'm actually going to New Zealand to hike the TA, which I'm super excited about. So I knew I'd be leaving my job to go do that trail. And it just kind of made sense to go ahead and do the Benton Mackay Trail, you know, in that, like after I quit before I left for New Zealand. So the timing just lined up. And yeah, and I think that really honestly was why I chose the fall. It was mostly just the timing. But I was nervous about like the leaf litter on the trail and the darkness and it getting cold. But I think my weather, I kind of lucked out with weather overall, really. So.
Right. Yeah, that's, I also hiked the Benton Mackay in fall, and like the depth of the leaves and the long, long hours of darkness are not that conducive to an FKT. So I was just curious why you chose that window. You mentioned the weather and that it was, you know, you lucked out. What was the weather like? And did you have any inclement weather? Like when I hiked the Benton Mackay, I had to hike through a hurricane. So like, I assume that didn't happen to you.
No, I got way lucky then.
Talk about like how the weather did or did not impact your hike, your FKT.
Yeah. So I was mentally preparing myself for a lot of rain because when I through hiked the AT and the long trail, it rained a bunch for both of those hikes. And so I just wanted to be ready. And I was kind of worried that Colorado had made me a little bit soft because we have such nice weather here all the time. So yeah, I was trying to wrap my head around that. But then actually it really only sprinkled like my, I guess that would be my like second night sleeping out on the trail. And it was while I was sleeping. So it didn't even affect me at all. And then my last night and morning, it rained a bit harder. It was raining pretty hard actually, and it was a little bit chilly. But at that point, I was kind of grateful for the rain because I really did feel like I had lucked out with weather, and it didn't really feel like a true Appalachian experience without the rain. So I hiked in the rain in the dark my last morning for about 5 hours. And then the sun came out and, you know, the rain dissipated. And at that point, I only had, I think, maybe like 11 miles left. So all in all, like very easy weather to deal with.
Yeah, it sounds like it sounds pretty ideal. What were the temperatures like?
In the Smokies, it was a bit chilly in the dark. But then once I got out of the Smokies, I felt like things warmed up pretty nicely. Going through my photos, I'm like, oh, I was wearing like all my layers. So I must have been cold. But I don't really remember being like overly cold when I thru-hiked the Arizona Trail this like even later in the year than when I did the BMT. It was brutally cold. And yeah, like single digits at night on the North Rim, like just really hard. And this was very easy compared to that for a fall hike.
You mentioned a lot of time in the dark. And I know one of the things I noticed when I did the Benton Mackay was that it had way more wildlife than the AT. And I'm wondering, did you have any memorable wildlife encounters either at night or during the day?
My favorite wildlife encounter was pretty mild, and it was at night, and it's just seeing all of the little like spider eyes glowing in the beam of my headlamp. I feel like it's kind of crazy to imagine just how many spiders are around at any given time. So it's always kind of like a reminder of that.
Sort but of they made me feel a little actually.
They are, there's so many. But it
there's
did make
thousands
me
of them
alone. It's just like me and the spiders in the dark hanging out. So that was kind of cool. What wasn't cool was all the webs. I was trying to remember if I had ever hiked another trail where I ran through so many spider webs. And I genuinely don't think I've ever experienced more webs than I did on the Benton Mackay Trail. And I have no idea why. I don't know if it was like the season or the fact that there's not that many people out there, but it was insane how many webs I ran through. And some of them were very, very strong, like pulled my hood off kind of strong. But and then I was like, am I imagining that? crazy mountain spiders. But then my scary animal encounter was when I was just wrapping up the Smokies, getting close to Fontana. I was hiking along. I was pretty tired at this point. I think it was probably like 8:30 or 9 p.m. And I heard some like rustling in the like rhododendrons kind of to the right of the trail. And it didn't really register right away. I think I was pretty tired. I went through the Smokies in just 2 days. And those were probably my two biggest days of hiking ever back to back. So I was pretty exhausted. that was a new experience for me. And whatever the animal was that I startled started growling. It kind of like stomped around a bit in the leaves. It sounded big. So my best guess is that I startled a bear. You know, other people had said it could have been like a wild boar. I don't know if they growl. I've never heard a wild boar, so I'm just not sure. But it definitely scared me. And so I started like calling out and like clacking my trekking poles together like the whole rest of my way out of the woods until I hit the pavement that would take me to Fontana. But yeah, that freaked me out.
I think anytime something growls at you, it's valid to be freaked out.
Yeah, for sure.
It was definitely like pretty much a guaranteed animal for, I'm not happy about you being here.
Yeah.
So, did you run into any dogs? Because I feel like dogs are like prevalent in the South on these trails.
Yes. Yeah. And I'd love to know if you had a similar experience, but I ran into like a pack. It was like a motley crew of dogs on a pretty like hard stretch of trail. It was that like ridge walk after Fontana before, I want to say it was Topoko Lodge maybe, before that big climb up Hayo Bald. But I ran into four dogs. There was like a pit bull, a hound, a Malamute, and then like a black and white spotted dog. And one of them had a collar, but they were all freaked out to see me. They were barking. I was like hiking uphill towards them and didn't notice them until they started barking and didn't really know what to do. I kind of just expected I would see like a group of hikers up ahead who they belonged to. Three of the dogs ran off. I never saw any people. One of the dogs followed me for about 2 miles up and down the hills. And then eventually just ran off. And I was a little bit relieved because I honestly didn't know what I was going to do. That dog didn't have a collar. There was no way I could like call somebody. And I didn't want any of the dogs to follow me down to the road because I figured that would be like less safe for them than just staying in the woods. Luckily, none of them were aggressive. I was a little nervous at first when they were barking, but I just kind of right? was like, hey, how's it going? Like talking really sweet. And that seemed to like diffuse the situation. And then later, this was before I got to the Towie like canal trail walk, there was a hunting dog that had like its big GPS collar on. She was super sweet and chatty. And I had seen like a group of hunters earlier in the day with like 5 or 6 dogs. So I just kind of assumed she was part of their crew, hoping that I'd find her person down in the parking lot, but then started to realize like it's getting dark. Like there's not going to be somebody waiting because nobody waits for their hunting dogs. And so I ended up calling the number on her collar. The guy who answered, you know, said, oh, she wandered off too far. I didn't want to hike out to get her. We were going to come back tomorrow. I live 2 hours away. And then he asked if I would tie her to a tree, which I really didn't feel comfortable with. And I told him, you know, like there's like, I don't want to leave your dog like stranded tied to a tree overnight. And then he kind of reassured me that he'd have a friend come pick her up in a couple hours. And I didn't have like, I don't carry like a knife or anything sharp when I'm hiking. So I didn't have a way to like cut my bear line. I didn't have like a rope. So I actually had to like take cord off the sides of my pack and like tie her up with that, which like was kind of a bummer, I guess, but I didn't really use those cords for anything anyways. So,
right.
And then as I was hiking away, she was just like howling and barking and I just felt awful. I was so exhausted at that point. I was just like bawling my eyes out, like walking along the river. I could hear her forever, but I did get a text from him the next day when I turned my service back on, that his friend had gotten her overnight. So she wasn't waiting that long, but it's just so sad. Like, I can't imagine anybody just like leaving their dog in the woods overnight. Like it's like a different culture out there.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I'm glad that they let you know that they picked the dog up too. Cause I would have been very anxious for the dog until I knew otherwise.
I was like, I can't just let her hike with me. Like that would be brutally unfair. I think I still had like 100 miles left at that point or close to it. And yeah, it would have been, she would have followed me too, I'm sure of it. So yeah, probably right. Like best case scenario that I tied her up.
Yeah, I'm glad she had a collar and you were able to get a hold of the person. Aside from having to cut the cords, or not cut them, but remove the cords from your pack, you mentioned you had some gear failures. Can you talk a little bit about those and like repercussions maybe that they had?
For sure. So this was that same day that I ran into the group of four dogs. I'm trying to think, that was day three. So on day three, I was ending my day coming down Mud Gap Road. That's a terrible road. Maybe it was just terrible for me because my feet were really hurting at that point. But it was just full of like round, like roly rocks and baby heads and like moss covered rocks and mud. And I was really using my trekking poles like pretty heavily for balance. And it was dark, of course, at this point. I heard interesting noise from one of my trekking poles. Turns out it was carbon fiber shearing off. And that was a major bummer because I am definitely like really reliant on my trekking poles. So yeah, it was broken like beyond repair. The whole like the lowermost like section of the tripod had just like split in half. So I just stuffed that in my pack and kept going, if not a little bit depressed. Mm-hmm. But when I got to camp, I also realized that I had lost my InReach charging cable. And that was kind of like a little bit upsetting because, you know, I'd been kind of like live tracking my hike on my InReach so that, you know, my parents could kind of like check in every once in a while and make sure I was still moving, and my boyfriend was doing the same. And so I wouldn't be able to have them kind of like keep tabs on me anymore, which was a little bit of a bummer. And then I also wasn't sure like how my cell service would be going forward. So I kind of just like shot a message to everybody. I was like, hey, not going to have the InReach anymore. Don't have my charging cable. It's dying. Like, I'm going to turn it off and save this last like 20% in case I have an emergency. And I'm pretty sure I lost that cord earlier that day in the morning in the dark when I had left the shelter at Fontana, the Fontana Hilton. My headlamp had died and I hadn't charged it overnight. So I was trying to charge it like while I was hiking, and that was a different cord than the cord for my InReach. And I think when I was like rummaging around in my bag of cords, the InReach cable just like flew out. So, which I hated. Oh, no. I hated like knowing that I had left a cord somewhere on the trail, but I was also like, well, it's on the AT at least, because that portion of the trail is like shared between the Benton McKay Trail and the AT. And I was like, maybe a hiker will find it and be like, oh my God, I needed this cord. So that was the only thing that made me feel better about losing a cord. So those were my gear malfunctions. But aside from that, like the headlamp I had chosen was great. I made sure to keep a charge going forward. I had a big charging block, so I never risked like running out of power. But yeah, and then I did find a replacement trekking pole. It was a rhododendron branch that happened to be like the same weight as my other trekking pole. So it felt pretty balanced. And I used that for the last like 3 days of my hike.
That's really lucky. I feel like every time I pick up a stick, it's like way too heavy. And then it's just like, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm going to have like really big biceps on one arm if I just keep using this, because like they don't match.
Yeah. The weight was super crucial. Fine. And it was just, it felt so lucky. I was like, oh my gosh. Like mentally, I think it was the hardest, the mental blow of losing a trekking pole was the hardest part. Cause it just, I can't just hike with one. Like, I don't know what it is. You can't get in a rhythm. Felt like I couldn't breathe. Right. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I broke the lower portion of my trekking pole on my Washington PCT unsupported hike. And I ended up just like extending it like as far as I could. And then I just kept using it, and it like wore down to like, it was like way too short, but at least it was in my hand like by the end. So it was like, you know, 10 inches shorter or something ridiculous than like, or maybe not 10, 6 inches shorter than it needed to be, but I was still had one in my hand. So it felt balanced. Like, cause yeah, like hiking with one just doesn't, it just feels weird.
It does. Yeah. That's amazing. I didn't even think of that. And I probably could have done the same thing. Cause it was low down on that third piece. So I probably could have just, I could have like finagled something. I was tired. It was dark. It's like, it's all hope is lost. Like,
right. Well, I mean, the reality is I've had to do this before when I wasn't sleep deprived. So I was just like, oh, okay, I can do this and it will last for a while. So the carbon fiber does wear down pretty quickly though.
It does.
Especially, when that little, like the tip is gone, the thing that's actually strong, like carbon fiber doesn't last very long. You mentioned, so your InReach died or was dying and you couldn't use it. So how were you documenting your hike? Did you have like a watch or something that you were using instead?
I did. Yeah. So I had upgraded my watch at the beginning of the year, to one that actually had enough like storage space and battery life to kind of like record my backpacking. And so I used the Garmin Enduro, and I actually was inspired by the way you were tracking your hikes. When I saw your track for the Pennsylvania AT, you had recorded it like as one continuous activity. And I was like, oh my gosh, is that possible? So that kind of like made me start thinking like, okay, what do I want in a watch? Like, and so that was kind of my mission, was to like find a watch that I could record like my entire hike on. And I had tested this out with a shorter hike kind of locally. I did the Collegiate Loop in September as like a shakedown hike for the Benton McKay Trail. And I had recorded the whole activity in one go. And I was like, this is great. But I also wasn't sure how long of an activity I could store on the watch. And reading your trip report from the Washington PCT, I was like, my gosh. There is a limit. Like, so I lucked out. I just kind of winged it and was like, okay, let's see, like 288 miles. Like, can we do this? And it worked out. But yeah, like after reading your report, I was like, oh shoot, I mean, I guess I don't know how close I cut it. Probably not that close, but like, yeah, there is a limit.
Right. Turns out there is a limit. It is not infinite space, which that was my moment of like, what will I do? Woe is me. I can't figure this out.
I can't imagine. Oh, it'd be so stressful to like imagine losing the whole activity. Like I also just imagined my watch like dying and then like not saving. And then like, I know kind of like how you were writing, you know, it would still count for you. Like even if you didn't have your track to submit, it's like, you know what you did, you know, you accomplished it. But there's just that fear of like, oh my gosh, like I really want proof that I did this. So
don't hit the wrong button. And like for me too, it was like 72 miles from the end. I'm like, really? You couldn't fit 72 more miles on there? Come on. Like
totally.
So yeah. Yeah. So you mentioned at the very beginning, you know, that if you'd been doing this self-supported, you might have been able to solve some of these gear failures. And that was definitely my experience when I was on the Washington PCT. And so I'm kind of curious if you had some thoughts about this, like the mental aspect, like for me, the mental aspect of going unsupported for that long was way more challenging than the physical aspect. And I hadn't considered, like when I do things self-supported, just how much like being able to stop at a store and buy a Coke like does for your like mental side, or like realizing, oh, I can't solve this problem outside of like what I have with me. Like, I don't know. Can you speak to like that experience? Because obviously you've got a lot of experience with self-supported type of things, and then how this was different.
Yeah, I definitely think unsupported like ups the ante and the mental pressure a little bit. Just kind of like stepping out of my shuttle and being dropped off at the beginning of the climb up Mount Sterling. It's like, I got out of the car and I was like, oh my God, I hope I have everything. Like I'm going to be out here for 7 days. And like, I hope I didn't forget something really important. And like, I knew that I had like run through so many checklists. Like I was like, I'm like 99.9% sure I have everything that I need. But then there is just that component of like, well, I can't predict everything that's going to happen in the next 7 days. I can't predict like getting injured and hiking slower. And then I don't have enough food to accommodate that. Like, you know, just all of those pieces. And I know like when reading your trip report for Washington, it was like, it ended up taking a little bit longer than you thought. And you really just had the food that you had. And so I was definitely nervous about that. And I also knew that I had kind of underestimated my caloric needs, just to kind of like moderate how much weight I was carrying. But yeah. And then just, you kind of run into people like, I only met two other backpackers that were doing the BMT while I was out there. But one of them, you know, was like trying to offer me a snack and I was like, oh, like, thank you so much, but I'm good. I have everything I need. And it feels like almost like against like the code of a thru hiker to say no to like anything, you know, like people are offering you something, they're being nice. Like you want to like be grateful and take it. And it's like, no, but I can't, like I'm out here like in my own little bubble, kind of like doing this effort that's very different than any other thru hiking effort I've done before. And while it's so nice to kind of like talk to the people you see out on the trail, you really have to kind of like keep a wall up and be like, yeah, but I'm doing this like without any help, like no help. And so, and then another, the other backpacker that I met had been talking about some convenience store somewhere along the trail saying, you know, they had like this great snack or this great food. And I was like, oh yeah, no, I can't stop. Like, thank you so much for telling me, but like, I'm not going to stop there. And just being like, oh, like, I wish I didn't know that. And luckily, like I didn't run into any trail magic. I think that probably would have been hard, towards like the, like if I had, you know, run into trail magic in the last like day or so, it might've been hard to just like walk right by. Like, I like to think that I could have just walked right by, but you just never know until you're like, you have that challenge in front of you. And then I was also really nervous about whether or not it was considered support to like text. So like, I really like didn't text much at all. Like I sent that one message to my partner, you know, telling him my back hurt and I checked in, but I was like, I don't want to get too much like emotional support because I don't know if that counts as support. But then I like reread the like rules and I was like, oh, okay, technology, like that's okay communication wise. But yeah, I did. It was just this feeling of being kind of completely on my own, which was both empowering and like nerve wracking. And then just grappling with like the miles still ahead. I tried not to think about that when I was like laying down to like rest periodically. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm just not going to think about how I have like 154 miles left. And after tomorrow, I'll still have over 100 left. Like just the crazy mile math that happens. Like every mile I hiked, I was like re-adding and like subtracting like what I had left. So yeah, I do think that like doing it unsupported kind of like added a layer of, I would say like stress and also empowerment, like both to the experience.
Definitely. Yeah, I would agree with that completely. And it's funny you mentioned the trail magic because, I mean, the hardest thing about my Washington PCT unsupported was probably my feet. But like when I think back on it, like it's almost a tie with the fact that the last, like, I don't know, next to last 24 hours, I passed trail magic at every road crossing. And like literally, like I think it was 4 separate trail magics. And I was also going counter to what all the thru hikers were going. So it was just a constant stream of people being like, great trail magic at the next road. Oh, you're going to make it. Oh, there's this, there's that. And telling me like all the things I could have. And as you alluded to earlier, I had run out of food. So I was rationing hard. And I had to walk.
Oh my gosh.
And like, I mean, one of the trail magic people like literally walked up to me and was like trying to forcefully hand me things. And I'm like,
oh
no.
My gosh.
Like, and I had to like kind of rudely just go past because like they were like trying to put it in my hands. And I'm like, no, like, because I can't have that, you know, and just be like, no, sorry, I can't. I'm doing this unsupported. Like, yeah, like you say, and it feels so wrong to just be like, no, I can't have that, or no, thank you, or try to explain that you're doing this weird thing and everybody's just like, I don't understand like why you won't take this.
Yeah, like why?
Yeah.
I cannot imagine.
What is wrong
I know
with
when
you?
I read that. When I read that in your trip report, I was like, that would have taken some serious resolve to just keep walking. And then yeah, just like that feeling of, oh, I would kind of feel like a little guilty, like I'm not being a good thru hiker if I just like blowing by these people. There's like some pressure associated with trail magic, I feel like.
Yes, you must take the trail magic. You have to at least drink a soda or something.
Totally.
So I'd love to hear, and maybe you've already talked about it, but maybe just a recap of your highest high and your lowest low.
So I think weirdly, like my highest high didn't happen at like a great viewpoint or, you know, like a really awesome section of trail. I honestly don't even remember exactly what section of trail this was. It might've been like on my fourth day at some point. And I was on one of the very many old road beds that makes up the Benton McKay Trail. And this one was a good one. There weren't too many like sharp pointy rocks in it, but I was just like walking along and it was kind of the golden hour. The sun was starting to set. And I just realized that I was super grateful for the experience to be able to like elect to go out and do something hard and have the time to do it. And also to be able to ride the emotional roller coaster and like learn from that roller coaster. I've like struggled with anxiety kind of my whole life. And I think a lot of times when I'm like in my anxiety, I'm like, oh my gosh, things are so bad and they're going to be like this forever. And just like doing hikes like this, I think has taught me that, like stuff is changing moment to moment. So yeah, maybe I'm having a hard moment. But give it an hour and I'm going to feel totally differently. And I might be having the best moment of my life in an hour from now. So, just being patient and like willing to like ride that roller coaster. And so I think honestly, that was probably like my highest high, was just like fully realizing like how great it was that I could take the time to go do something like this. And just, you know, take it 1 mile at a time. Especially given how my back felt in the beginning. And then probably, yeah, my lowest low, like the moment of my lowest low was breaking my trekking pole for sure. I was like, just like, wasn't expecting that. I don't know why. I was just like, yeah, that's not something that's going to happen to me on this hike. But in addition to that, I think my feet kind of were a part of that as well. Given that like doing days this long is very new to me, like prior to the collegiate loop, like I had never done like back-to-back 40-mile days. So I guess it might have been like nerve pain, but just this like burning and like zapping sensation and just that really like tender, like the meat of my feet was just like really, really sore. Like so much so that I just kind of wanted to like grind my teeth while I was walking. And just like kind of realizing that when I was really tired, it was way harder to ignore that sensation. And I was pretty tired that night when my pole broke. So I think that was probably my lowest low, but I mean, that was my third day and I had like 4 more days after that almost. And so the fact that things didn't keep getting worse is like really nice.
Good to hit that low point early. It's all up and go all up from there.
Totally.
Oh gosh. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today and sharing this FKT experience with us. It's really, really great to chat with you about it.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so nice to finally meet you and get to talk to you.
Thanks again, Ivy, for coming on the show. You can read about her FKT on the website, fastestknowntime.com, and follow her adventures on her website, shetreks.co. I also want to give a special thank you to John G for supporting the FKT podcast. John G makes trail running essentials designed to go further, perfect for your next FKT. And beyond making super durable trail running apparel that's backed by a 5-year run everywhere guarantee, they also donate 2% of sales to clean water programs in the places we run. So far, John G has donated $1 million to clean water and counting. Take advantage of a 10% off coupon at johng.com with code FKT.